run through him as he realized what they were seeing. He reached out tentatively until his fingertips touched the rear surface of the chamber. "It's not a wall," he said. Anderson and Sato stepped closer, peering intently. "It's a canvas," Langdon said.
"But it billowed,"
Sato said quickly. "Yes, in a very strange way." Langdon examined the surface more closely. The sheen on the canvas had refracted the candlelight in a startling manner because the canvas had just billowed away from the room, fluttering backward through the plane of the rear wall. Langdon extended his outstretched fingers very gently, pressing the canvas backward. Startled, he yanked his hand back. "There's an opening."
"Pull it aside," Sato ordered.
Langdon's heart pounded wildly now. He reached up and clutched the edge of the canvas banner, slowly pulling the fabric to one side. He stared in disbelief at what lay hidden behind it. "My God." Sato and Anderson stood in stunned silence as they looked through the opening in the rear wall. Finally, Sato spoke.
"It appears we've just found our pyramid."
Chapter 39. Robert Langdon stared at the opening in the rear wall of the chamber. Hidden behind the canvas banner, a perfectly square hole had been hollowed out of the wall. The opening, about 3 feet across, appeared to have been created by removing a series of bricks. For a moment in the darkness, Langdon thought the hole was a window to a room beyond. Now, he saw it was not. The opening extended only a few feet into the wall before terminating, like a rough-hewn cubbyhole. The recessed niche reminded Langdon of a museum alcove designed to hold a statuette. Fittingly, this niche displayed one small object. About 9 inches tall, it was a piece of carved, solid granite. The surface was elegant and smooth, with four polished sides that shone in the candlelight. Langdon could not fathom what it was doing here. A stone pyramid?
"From your look of surprise," Sato said, sounding self-satisfied, "I take it this object is not typical within a chamber of reflection?"
Langdon shook his head.
"Then perhaps you would like to reassess your previous claims regarding the legend of a Masonic pyramid hidden in Washington?"
Her tone now was almost smug. "Director," Langdon replied instantly, "this little pyramid is not the Masonic pyramid."
"So it is merely coincidence that we found a pyramid hidden at the heart of the U.S. Capitol in a secret chamber belonging to a Masonic leader?"
Langdon rubbed his eyes and tried to think clearly. "Ma'am, this pyramid doesn't resemble the myth in any way. The Masonic pyramid is described as enormous, with a tip forged of solid gold. Moreover," Langdon knew, "this little pyramid, with its flat top, was not even a true pyramid. Without its tip, this was another symbol entirely. Known as an unfinished pyramid, it was a symbolic reminder that man's ascent to his full human potential was always a work in progress. Though few realized it, this symbol was the most widely published symbol on Earth, over 20 billion in print. Adorning every $1 bill in circulation, the unfinished pyramid waited patiently for its shining capstone, which hovered above it as a reminder of America's yet unfulfilled destiny and the work yet to be done, both as a country and as individuals."
"Lift it down,"
Sato said to Anderson, motioning to the pyramid.
"I want a closer look."
She began making room on the desk by shoving the skull and crossed bones to one side with no reverence whatsoever. Langdon was starting to feel like they were common grave robbers, desecrating a personal shrine. Anderson maneuvered past Langdon, reached into the niche, and clamped his large palms on either side of the pyramid. Then, barely able to lift at this awkward angle, he slid the pyramid toward him and lowered it with a hard thud onto the wooden desk. He stepped back to give Sato room. The director repositioned the candle close to the pyramid and studied its polished surface. Slowly she ran her tiny fingers over it, examining every inch of the flat top and then the sides. She wrapped her hands around to feel the back, then frowned in apparent disappointment.
"Professor, earlier you said the Masonic pyramid was constructed to protect secret information."
"That's the legend, yes."
"So, hypothetically speaking, if Peter's captor believed this was the Masonic Pyramid. He would believe it contained powerful information.
Langdon nodded, exasperated. Yes, although even if he found this information, he probably would not be able to read it. According to legend, the contents of the pyramid are encoded, making them indecipherable, except to the most worthy.
I beg your pardon.
Despite Langdon's growing impatience, he replied with an even tone. Mythological treasures are always protected by tests of worthiness. As you may recall, in the legend of the sword in the stone refuses to give up the sword except to Arthur, who was spiritually prepared to wield the sword's awesome power. The Masonic Pyramid is based on the same idea. In this case, the information is the treasure, and it is said to be written in an encoded language, a mystical tongue of lost words, legible only to the worthy. A faint smile crossed Sato's lips.
That may explain why you were summoned here tonight.
I'm sorry? Calmly, Sato rotated the pyramid in place, turning it a full 180 degrees. The pyramid's fourth side now shone in the candlelight. Robert Langdon stared at it with surprise.
It appears, Sato said, that someone believes you're worthy.
Chapter 40. What's taking Trish so long? Catherine Solomon checked her watch again. She'd forgotten to warn Dr. Abaddon about the bizarre commute to her lab, but she couldn't imagine the darkness had slowed them down this much. They should have arrived by now. Catherine walked over to the exit and heaved open the lead-lined door, staring out into the void. She listened for a moment, but heard nothing. Trish? She called out, her voice swallowed by the darkness. Silence. Puzzled, she closed the door, took out her cell phone, and called the lobby. This is Catherine. Is Trish out there? No, ma'am, the lobby guard said. She and your guest headed back about 10 minutes ago. Really? I don't think they're even inside Pod 5 yet. Hold on, I'll check. Catherine could hear the guard's fingers clicking on his computer keyboard. You're right. According to Ms. Dunn's keycard logs, she has not yet opened the Pod 5 door. Her last access event was about 8 minutes ago at Pod 3. I guess she's giving your guest a little tour on his way in. Catherine frowned. Apparently. The news was a bit odd, but at least she knew Trish wouldn't be long in Pod 3. The smell in there is terrible. Thanks. Has my brother arrived yet? No, ma'am, not yet. Thank you. As Catherine hung up, she felt an unexpected twinge of trepidation. The uneasy feeling made her pause, but only for a moment. It was the same exact disquiet she'd felt